Welcome to FemLead, the podcast on female leadership and role models. This show aims to inspire and equip you with the tools you need to navigate your career plans. FemLead brings inspiring career perspectives and strategies to guide your path to success. Your host, Alexandra, will interview role models on new exciting topics with each episode. If you like what you hear, give us a review and subscribe to the show on your preferred streaming platform. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of FemLead Podcast. It's great to be here with you today. We have an exciting episode coming up. I have so much respect and admiration for our next guest, and I'm very much looking forward to introducing to you a new field, and that is the automotive industry. So without further ado, I will introduce our next speaker at FemLead Podcast. Simone Gemco looks back at 10 years of achievements in the automotive product engineering field within the British automotive brands. She combines a strong academic background demonstrated through a PhD with first-hand industrial experience and excellent people skills. This allowed her to quickly progress from engineering professional to people manager. In her current role as a manager, she leads and develops a team of world-class engineers in the automotive engineering industry. However, to get there, she had to learn about leadership quickly, including team leadership and management, building business relationships and positive influence, and creating strategies to achieve business targets. Simone's influence extends beyond the workplace, as she is the president of the International Association of Women London, building a community of professional women in London through organizing monthly events. Sounds very familiar, right? In her efforts to promote women's empowerment and gender equality, she wants to create outstanding role models for everyone. In discussions with female professionals, Simone quickly recognized that career progression in people management could be more straightforward for most. On her way, she has benefited from mentoring in leadership. She knows that not everyone has a great mentor at their fingertips, so therefore she shares her learnings and experience in her blog Career with a View to support young professionals with career ambitions and make their talent visible to all parts of their business. We're really thrilled to have Simone joining us today, so without further ado, let's welcome Simone to FemLead Podcast. Hi, Simone. Welcome to FemLead Podcast. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm very excited to be here.
I'm so happy that we got to connect, and we connected through our networks, and we had a very nice initial chat. I really admire what you do, and also I find your job pretty cool. So we were like, okay, let's discuss career, and let's discuss women empowerment, and also what we can do to tap a little bit into the mentorship topic. So there's plenty of topics we want to focus on today, but let's start by defining a little bit more your current setup at McLaren, because we would like to know more about your role and also what does it entail and how does your day-to-day look like?
Perfect. So I am the vehicle safety manager in McLaren Automotive, which is a very well-known supercar brand. And what my team and I are responsible for is like basically develop and deliver the safety attribute for cars. So that means like we advise other function groups on like how they have to do the engineering so that we can pass all of the crash tests worldwide at the end of a program. So, and me specifically as a manager, I'm responsible for building and leading this team. Then on top of that, that was like the technical background to it. But like also I find myself being in a very critical role for the company, because without the homologation of the car, which encloses the safety attribute, we wouldn't be able to sell the car. And obviously, we touch customers' lives if things are going wrong. So I take my job very serious. And then, yeah, so a lot of my day is actually very operational based. So I would literally say management 101. I have like a very set cadence of meetings with my team, but also with my colleagues, which are working alongside with me and my own boss. So every week for me starts the same with the team. We have a startup meeting where we run through everything the team has to achieve that week, where we have to pay special attention and basically the priorities, and also where the team has the opportunity to get my input on the tasks, like especially if they're not sure about something. And then I have weekly one-to-ones with every of my team members. So that's actually something I take very serious as well, because, you know, that's the operational side, but they also have like their people, you know, and they have like things they need to discuss with me. And this is the opportunity to have this one-on-one chat. And then other things are like obviously staff meetings with my colleagues who work alongside me, the other managers, and then my own one-to-one with my boss. And obviously it's also a lot of ad hoc stuff to do. You know, businesses are very flexible. Things change all the time. And I have to react as it happens. So basically, yeah, escalation meetings, advising on new ideas, etc. And that's basically ad hoc. And then there's one bit to it, which I like to call the leadership. Might be only 10% of my time, but it's actually really, really important time, because this is why I think more about the long-term plan for the team. You know, what is the future of vehicle safety McLaren going to look like? What are the skills and the tools the team is missing? Who we should hire, you know, to fill those gaps, and also to build leadership connections across the business, because we as a team, we cannot operate in a vacuum. So basically, yeah, reaching out to other managers, building good relationships with them, defining with them how we want to work in the future together to implement the safety attribute as best as we can.
I was thinking while you were describing the day-to-day, and thank you for that introduction, that you are probably the guest that shared the most details of how the day-to-day can look like, which is great, because I think, you know, looking at different roles within a different industry, let's say in, you know, let's say most of our listeners initially would not have worked in the automotive industry, right? Especially not on safety. There's no personal like knowledge to know about this unless you ask someone who works in the field. And how cool it is that now we can discuss this, because, you know, when you talk about safety and the crash test, I think about all the car shows I used to watch on the weekends with my family growing up. And then they always did a crash test, right? And there's a team, of course, behind that, fairly large team that makes sure that everything we do within that scope is at the highest standards possible and under the safest conditions. So now we get to talk to you about it and understand more about the field. And when you look at the overall, the description of your role, would you say that it is in the beginning, when you started that, when you started this role before you moved through the ranks to become a manager, was it as operational as now? How would you advise people that start in this industry to look at their role in the beginning?
Yeah, so before I was a principal engineer, everything was operational. So gladly, I didn't have to do anything with leadership, but I was like literally responsible for a program. A program is a car and every safety aspect of it, which relates to crashworthiness. And yeah, so I personally think you need to take this job very, very serious. It's just like, you know, there's a lot of things which connect to it, and like you just cannot get it wrong, basically. And also you need to be a good communicator, and you need to work a lot with other people, because the car, so you have to imagine it's a system of a lot of components, and you will need to work with all of those other groups who are delivering those components. So you cannot work just on your desk. You literally need to reach out, like, are you aware of this requirement? If not, perfect. Let's meet. Let's discuss it and come up with a plan, etc. So, and then obviously the other one is when you work in crash, you need to be able to travel a lot, because you have to go to the tests, which is basically the cherry on top at the end. But yeah, you need to be flexible as well with that.
Very, very good insights, and thank you for detailing a little bit more also the beginning of your career. Super interesting, and also a very good overview of what does it mean to work in a very important part of the car manufacturing process as well, right? So that's it's great that we get to do this here. And I want to look a little bit more on your career progression when it comes to, obviously, less the operational role, but more the process of becoming a principal engineer and a manager, a people manager. So how would you describe it overall? And did you know that you wanted to join a STEM field like since you were growing up? And, you know, how was the start of your career at McLaren?
It's a really interesting question, because my career path wasn't straight towards management at all. So how did I become an engineer? So basically, I was good in maths and physics in school. You know, I enjoyed that, came easy to me. And when I came to make a decision what I want to do after school, I was like, I want to be an engineer. So that was actually unusual at that time because most people just didn't know what they wanted to do. But for me, it was very clear. And then also what was really useful, because I'm from Berlin and we have a very big technical university, and they were offering mechanical engineering with a variety of applications. So I basically, in the end, I studied mechanical engineering with focus on aerospace technology. So actually, I wanted to do planes first. But then I actually was an exchange student and I came to the UK. And there I was more focusing on like the predictive aspect of material behavior. So I was doing a course on computational sciences. And then I did a PhD. And that was actually, for me, kind of the start more into an academic career, because that is something I really could imagine a lot when I was in university and doing the PhD. But at the end, I was like, okay, hang on a minute. Before I actually go into academia, I really would like to be a little bit in industry so that I can actually give students that edge as well, you know, so that I can actually talk out of experience. But that's kind of where I got hooked, because I got my job first, Jaguar Land Rover. And then there was quite interesting as well. Like, so I like to work in industry and I like what I was doing. So I was doing like simulations for crash, actually. So that's where all the whole safety aspect is coming from. But then after a few years, I was like, okay, it really feels like this is a repetition of what I'm doing every day. And I don't really feel challenged anymore. And that's actually where also my career progression started, because I think a lot of people felt with me like quite talented and quite driven. So I got actually promoted a lot. And then after being a few years in Jaguar Land Rover, this opportunity in McLaren came up as a principal engineer. So where actually someone reached out to me and said, like, look, I really think you would be really good for this. And this is how I came to McLaren. And there I actually was also more hired as a technical person. So more like a technical expert role. So that's originally what they wanted to mold me into. But then what came quite clear that I'm actually good at managing myself and managing my work. And I was also a good communicator. So I got the things done very well. And then the opportunity came up that they were looking for a people manager for the team. And they basically asked me to be, what was it called, like the stand-in manager. And that all went very well. So in the end, I got the job permanently. And this is how I came into people management. I actually like it a lot. It's very challenging. I find it actually harder than the technical aspect of the job, but I really like it because I really feel I'm making a lot of impact on the product and on the people around me.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And I'm happy you mentioned it's hard because yes, it is. And I think for some of us, or for some of us in general, without having, let's say, too much experience, especially in the beginning of our career, we assume that it's a great opportunity. You need to be a good communicator, but it will come naturally. You just need to have that role and that opportunity. And I also started my career full-time by being a people manager, first of student assistants mostly, me myself working as a student assistant and then being promoted. And, you know, like it was part of my day-to-day, so I didn't think much about it. But looking back, I mean, you have so much responsibility and you constantly need to be on top of the needs of your team without, you cannot double, you know, you can guess and you cannot have assumptions of what would work. You need to talk to your team and understand their needs and help them with their priorities.
Yeah.
And that is not straightforward. It's very much dependent on the relationship you build. It's very much dependent on the setup that you have, also on how you get along, because we're all humans and you're not going to click with everybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is something that you can't really define unless you start working within that role with the people managers. And, you know, I look back and I was like, oh, I mean, I had a great opportunity and I learned a lot, but it wasn't necessarily easy. I just didn't have a comparison as much to be like, okay, this is hard. And now looking back, it's been quite a journey for me as well. So I was curious, what do you feel is the most rewarding then to be a people manager?
So I think it's really actually, because when you are a people manager, you have to achieve things through people, which is hard. But on the other side, you can achieve something much grander than you could achieve yourself. Okay. And also, this is where you really can think about what they call the vision. Basically, it's just like, for me, it's really like, how do you want your team to be run? And what do you want it to be known for? And what do you want to achieve? And this is what I find very rewarding as a people manager, because you have the opportunity to work with these really great people and achieve a really big thing which you could not achieve by yourself. So that's one of the things which I appreciate a lot.
Fantastic. It's to say that if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Yeah. I think that really applies to what you've just mentioned. So tell us then, what is your view on leadership? What do you think makes a good leader?
Well, so I don't think there's a one fits all. So I think if you want to be a good leader, and I'm still at the beginning of this whole process of becoming a leader, is first of all to understand everyone brings a unique set of skills and experiences to the table. And you might be good at some things, but not at the others. But that's fine, you know, because in the end, you are called in to get a specific job done, you know. And you need to understand who you are to say like, oh, am I actually the right person for this job? So, for example, when I think about my own job, as I said, it's a lot of responsibility. It's something you have to take very serious. So I think a free-flowing thinker, very hands-off, would not be the right person for that, you know. But I think I'm a great person for this because I'm very structured. I see the big picture. And I can also be, how to say that, you know, I have a close eye on the detail of it. So I think makes me a good person for that. But then also there's a universal aspect, because I also as a leader, especially when it comes to the people. So before I was talking about the job to be done, now it's about the people you have to lead. There you have to be a bit more universal. So one of the big things I learned what makes good leaders is like actually having situational awareness. So when you're dealing with people, because that took me a while to understand, but when I think about my team, it's like, you know, I have all of those people in front of you with different experiences, skill sets, and different levels of experience. And now, and suddenly, although I have my own way of doing things, I have to adjust to them. So like when I give a task, I have to think a lot about like, okay, is this task appropriate for the person? What kind of help do they need to do to do the job? Is that right? This is where I think a good leader needs to be flexible and adjust the approach. Okay. Then in general, I think that's where I really think that actually applies to everyone. It's like you need to be objective and fair when you work with people, you know, and you need to take responsibility for what you're doing. But also when you have to take responsibility for the actions of your team, because in the end, you're the leader of them and you're setting the tone. So if they get something wrong, I have to say like, okay, this person got it wrong, but actually eventually it's my failure because, you know, I didn't set enough clear directions. Maybe the objective was not set properly, or I did not communicate effectively with them. So now I think this is where leaders really have to step up and take on responsibility.
That's a very good review. And also, you know, the word responsibility carries a lot of weight. And in general, it's also a very personal approach, meaning that we both understand that we have responsibility, but the way we share that responsibility with the group and the way that we let that responsibility impact us will be different. So you will see some of the different aspects of the job in a certain way, and I will see it in a different way, and then we might have to set the right expectations together, which is why alignment is fantastic. And we both now work in very big and large companies, and we see that alignment is part of the job. You need to constantly be aligned and have a lot of conversations with peers, right? And that's great. At the same time, there's also different ways of going around all of these expectations. So in our initial chat, we also talked about the importance of role models and kind of seeing yourself in the shoes of someone else. And we talked a little bit about traits and what defines us as individuals and as good professionals. Do you have a way that you, in a way, developed your leadership style? So how do you use your traits in your leadership style? Is there something you've reflected on or something that you noticed after, you know, moving up to being a people manager?
Yeah, so that's interesting. It's also a really hard question because that also feeds back into what I mentioned earlier, like you need to understand who you are. And sometimes you come up with very positive traits and sometimes not so positive traits. And I stick to the positive for now. So I think me personally, I'm a very patient person. Okay. So I rather have the things done right than rushing it. And I'm also patient with the people around me if they have development needs. So if someone comes to me and is like, you know, this is too much, I need more help, I will be the first one to say, like, fine, you know, let's stop here. What do you need? And then you need to be patient. So impatient means like not just like a week or two, that can take months and years. And also, what I think for me personally, what I recognize, what I'm good at, it's like I'm a very long-term thinker. So maybe I'm not thinking years ahead, but I think the next months ahead. So which really keeps me like, okay, what is actually important right now to do? Because not everything which is urgent needs to be done. You know, there are things which have to be properly prioritized because it will lead to the long-term success. And I think that is something which I bring to the table. And then also, maybe that's also something people tell me a lot. I am a very decisive person. I'm quite straight to the point. And that might also be the reason why at 18 years I was saying like I'm becoming an engineer, because I just like, yep, that's what I'm good at and that's what I'm going with. And that's also a thing right now which really helps me to be successful. Then also there's a flip side of the coin. You know, you cannot be great at everything. So for me, maybe it's like, because I'm a very structured person, I struggle with people who are less structured, okay? And this is something I have to work on. And this is something, actually, one of the things I really have put down on a piece of paper, like, what do I want to work on this year? And I was like, okay, working better with people who are not like me. Because this is going to happen all day long to you, isn't it?
I love the overview. And also, thank you for sharing what you're working on. Because I think, especially in the settings, we tend to only show the improvements and the areas where we excel. But at the same time, all of us have a personal development aim at work. We all want to be better at doing something extra or something new that we don't believe is to the best of standards based on our review, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we also get the help from our managers and peers to tell us, hey, maybe this is an area you want to look into, without trying to make it negative. It's more like, you know, an overview and kind of a focus on that. So very good that you also mentioned that for our audience, because the next question that I have, I think really relates to how you have progressed through your career by utilizing these reflections. I think you actually did a very good overview now for us in the last 3 minutes, and how cool it is that you actually put into words very specific actionable advice also for our audience. Why do you think it's important to have these reflections? But also, you know, you mentioned that you were quite decisive and that you knew what you wanted to do. A lot of people don't know that at 18, and some of us, you know, make the assumptions based on what we think we would like to study, but that's not always the case that it ends up the way that we wanted, right? How do you go around sharing your accomplishments and also your decisions to the bigger group? Why do you think it's important to like have more of a, you know, targeted approach? And I know that you want to promote your profile and your experience because you are passionate about providing role models for the community. Why do you think that is important for overall the community?
Yeah, so I think it's one of my bumper stickers, do good things and talk about it, because the reason is no one else will do it for you, okay? And also when you want to have a career, I think just doing good work is just not enough, you know, because many people do good work. And if you want to have a career, you know, you have to do a good job and then some. Well, because building a career can be really difficult, and especially you don't know from which background people are coming, and they might not have the support, you know, not just because people are not supportive, it's just like because the family maybe comes from like a different society or they are society. It's like, who tells you how to become successful in the career you have chosen and maybe become a people manager, you know? And I think this is where it's really important to have the opportunity to look up to someone, and maybe also someone you can copy to a certain extent when you're starting out. Because, you know, what do you learn about what's important in a career? It's just to most people, they won't be born with it, you know, like they need to learn it. And that's also one of the things why I am actually really stepping out of my own comfort zone, because I always felt like I was lacking a little bit the role models. There were some, but not many. And I also want to be part of this change. So, you know, I have actually learned a lot from other people that helped me to, you know, address my problems in work. So like literally sometimes I reached out to like some senior managers, like, you know, inviting them for a coffee and like, you know, I have this certain problem or I want some feedback. Can you help me? You know, and I want to give that back the same way, so that people actually can see me as a role model and then approach me to help them out with their problems so that they can further their own career.
A very good overview of why it's important to share your accomplishments. Let me highlight what you said in the beginning, which is you can do good things, but that might not be enough if people don't know about it.
Yeah, exactly.
That is something that I have also been told throughout my career. And I don't have a problem sharing necessarily my accomplishments. But I think that sometimes, you know, we kind of have this imposter syndrome or imposter experience that tells us, is this good enough? Is this something that, you know, should we share it now? Should we wait to have more results? Should we wait to get some sort of, you know, extra edge to it? How do you go around? How do you go about those situations where you're like, okay, I've done something cool. I know that I can talk about it and move some things forward, but should I do it now? Should I wait? Do you have these moments where you're like not sure about what to do?
Yeah. And I think what's important there is like not to work in isolation. So I think that's actually one of the mistakes I did at the beginning of my career. I thought I have to know it all and I have to do it all by myself. And it's not, just doesn't lead to results. So what does that mean, not working in isolation? Like literally reach out to the people who have to work with you, people who make decisions, and specifically ask them, what are the quality requirements you have for this? What is the amount of information you need for this? Are there topics you want to exclude? And me specifically, what is my role in that? And you can be quite open with them, because in the end, you're just helping them to come up with the best product possible or best result. And then also like this not working in isolation. Yeah. So this is also like where I think this is, first of all, reaching out to people is already talking in your favor. Okay. And then with regards to imposter syndrome, like you have already set the requirements, you're very clear with other people about it, and then you're just delivering that, you know, and you don't need to go over and above because you know exactly what they expect, and then you give them a little bit more. Just a tiny bit. But otherwise, like you sit in your corner, you work on something in isolation, you come up with something, and then you recognize on the day that's actually not what anyone wanted.
Absolutely. And I know sort of the reflection of like, you know, there's always something that you can do better, but you cannot completely believe that there's no end to it. Like you need to define, okay, this is, I'm delivered what I was supposed to and sell. Mm-hmm. Now it is time to move forward and get some feedback on it. That's also a very good way of looking at it. And I'm super happy you are so clear about it, because, you know, it's always based on the situation. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you also should trust your gut, and you should also trust your instinct that you're doing the right thing and you have the best intentions, right? So a very good reflection on that. Mm-hmm. And on that note, you know, you probably have been in different conversations where it was not necessarily straightforward what the solution should be. And you said you are very structured, and, you know, you work with many other colleagues and peers that are not necessarily working in the same style as you. And sometimes you need to have all of this alignment meetings. But maybe a step beyond, when you have to have difficult conversations or, you know, tackle subjects that you're probably not super keen on tackling, how do you handle that? How do you handle difficult conversations?
Ooh, yeah. So that's an interesting question. I think the first step to this is like not ignoring it. Okay. I think that's the worst thing you can do. Then also when it comes to difficult conversations, and again, that's where I like clear standards, documented standards, because that's something we agreed and something we can stick to, you know, and I feel that is also a fair way of treating people. And so also how I want to be treated, you know, and if someone has to have difficult discussion with me, they can give me critical feedback. I'm okay with it. But it's like really something where I was able to fulfill it so that I feel it's fair. And and then also what I then do. So first of all, I have not ignored it. I have set out a very clear standard. And now I actually can use feedback methods, you know, things you don't have to come up yourself with. You can Google that. It's like, how do you have a constructive conversation with other people? And so basically then before I go into the conversation, most of the time you have some time to prepare for it, okay? It's very rare that you are blindsided by it. So you can sit down and think a little bit about it, that, you know, how can I be respectful? How do I make it constructive? Then you also have to be open to listening to what the other person has to say. But at the end of the day, I always would say, like, you also need to know what your values are and you need to stick to that. And then also with the difficult conversations, also depends like who you're talking to. I think it's a little bit, for you as a manager, it's easier to talk to a team member because it's a little bit more of a one-way road because you have set out the standard. But if it's maybe with your colleagues on the same level or your boss, it's a little bit different, you know? And then when it comes to difficult conversations, it's like, it's almost like playing chess. When you prepare yourself, you have to prepare yourself for different outcomes, you know? Every move, the other person, which you don't know, can change the dynamic of the discussion. So we really need to prepare yourself for that. And also to make sure like you yourself can keep it constructive at all points, because sometimes those things can get emotional. Okay. So yeah, but to wrap it up, it's like, don't avoid it. Always make it constructive and make sure that you beforehand very make clear what the expectation was. So yeah, that's how I tackle difficult conversations.
Very clear. And also, you know, and like you've mentioned, this is something that can become emotional. So it's also okay if you don't have immediately a reaction or result out of this conversation. It's also okay to think about it. Mm-hmm. And I feel this is something that maybe we're not necessarily all aware of, that we do not need to have an immediate answer to questions or to situations, especially when they're difficult or the situation becomes a little bit more emotional. You can say, you know, thank you so much for this input. I would like to think about it. I would like to take a step back and I would like to have some time to consider what I've learned now or what I've received or what I've shared or whatever the setup is, right? Mm-hmm. It's very important that you also feel like the conversation doesn't become in any way constrained to giving some sort of results immediately, because it is not. So it's a good reflection as well, I think. And I'm really happy that you mentioned all the other 3 points. I think they're super, super old.
Yeah. Also, I didn't mention that, but like part of good, difficult conversations also to have follow-up sessions to it, which are with a very clear date. So if I was giving especially negative feedback to someone in my team, I would say, okay, so we had this discussion, we have clarified what the expectation was. So, and now there are other actions. So I expect you to X, Y, Z, but we will catch up at that point in the future. And I put immediately a meeting for this time into the calendar to hold all of us accountable of like showing up and following up on this, you know? And then you also, quite often people will come back like, you know what? You were actually right. And now I'm glad that you told me that this was not right or whatever. And like, I could actually adjust it. And then normally you achieve the goal anyways. And then people felt like, as I said, like it needs to be respectful, and they felt like they were dealt with in a nice way, in a good way.
Fantastic. Very good reflection. Let's talk a little bit about also your interest in inspiring and empowering women when it comes to, you know, promoting different, not only STEM roles, not only roles within the science fields, but also outside as role models and leaders. Mm-hmm. What is the mission of the International Association of Women that you are now the president of?
Yeah. So thanks for bringing it up. So I'm the president of the International Association of Women in London. And basically what the association is doing, they're providing like a global social platform for professional women to bridge the local or the territory gap and get in touch with each other and help professional women to progress in their careers. And the IAW, so that's what the International Association of Women is. We provide events to people, services, activities, and resources. And one big thing is the local events. So basically, once a month, every chapter is going to organize an event. And how I see this is, it's like a group of friends who happen to be professional women and who have problems in common. Okay. And, I'm not necessarily looking here at the STEM aspect of things. I'm more looking at the women who have want to have big careers. You know, what I found when I discuss with those women, it doesn't matter which industry it is, the problems are always the same. It's like, for example, how do I have a proper difficult discussion or something like this? It doesn't matter which industry it is, it's the approach, but the problem is the same. So yeah, and basically we provide this platform for people to get knowledge, but also to exchange with each other. And it's already quite established in the US, but it's now going properly international, and I am leading the IAW London.
Very, very cool. When it comes to the focus on the community part, because I mentioned in the beginning that you talk about mentorship and about how the how the fact that you had mentorship and role models and people to talk to in general really helped you in your career. Mm-hmm. How do you see the development of, seeing more women in leadership, and how can women become more confident to also want to go for those senior roles in organizations?
Oh, that's a loaded question. So first of all, why it's important to have women in leadership? It's the same way when you're hiring, you want to have the best talent, and 50% of the population are women, So you basically want to have access to the whole talent pool. And I think that's also what they have to understand when they think about, senior leadership. If you're just too focused on men, you're just missing out on all of these other things. And for women to become more confident, that's a really difficult question. I think really, again, you need to know what you want, and you need to have this unshatterable belief into yourself. You don't have to be perfect. No one is. But you really need to think about I am able to make this work. And then again, having a really constructive approach to self-reflection. So I mean, self-reflection, not in the way to put yourself down, but okay, I really would like to be a people manager. Okay, what do I need to demonstrate to the rest of the business, my boss, etc., that they recognize me as a person? And maybe when you have this self-reflection on what you're good at, you're recognizing a lot of gaps. And then you can go away and fill those. That's the same maybe with confidence, with having the right level of skills. You become more confident as well yourself. So actually that's basically where it all starts. You need to believe in yourself, and you really need to know what you want to do. And you should give the business the opportunity to tap into this big pool of potential and talent, which comes with women.
Absolutely. And when it comes to being able to get in some of those interactions, because like you said, this is something that also has to do with believing in yourself.
Yeah.
But sometimes you need a little bit of support to also kind of understand what are your areas of improvement, what are your top skills. You mentioned that mentorship really helped you. What do you recommend women that listen now and they are very inspired by what you share, but they don't know where to find a mentor or where to find that support? Of course, we welcome everybody in our communities. Mm-hmm. So they are always welcome to join our events and reach out. But when it comes to more personal interaction, what do you recommend to keep in mind?
Yeah, so I think it comes back, you need to be very clear on what you want to work on and what your problem is, because not everyone who's a successful person, manager, etc., will be good for you in this moment in time, And things sometimes change, That's a flexible relationship. But basically it's okay, I don't know, I want to be better in time management. It's not my problem, but someone else might. So I would look out, who do I think is in my company or outside in society, community, someone who's recognized for that in a positive way. And for this specific problem, I would approach the person, you know, and work with them together. And also think about like who's someone you recognize as very successful, for example, someone you admire and whose feedback you actually want, you know, because you think they will be honest with you and they will give you something you can work on. So I have done that a few times, but I have once been in a situation which was very charged and got emotional, not myself, the other person. And I was going out of this discussion, like, how did that happen? You know, and I reached out to someone who was in the room and asked, like, how did you view the situation? And that person gave me very frank feedback. He said, like, you didn't necessarily do something wrong, but you were very harsh with the other person on a very factual basis. And that just didn't go very well down. And next time you should maybe consider the other person more. Okay. And this is also where mentors are great because, you know, that's even better than reading a book, obviously, because especially when they are in the situation, they can give you very targeted feedback on yourself. That's great. I love those discussions because they are always very helpful. It's always very long term, but like just there's only things to be gained from it. There's no negative in it. The only thing you have to do, you need to be open to hear negative things about yourself. It's not all good. And you need to be willing to accept that.
And very, very mature kind of ending to kind of all of our questions here that not everything needs to be positive.
Yeah.
And that taking it all in, it's actually a sign of maturity and also of professionalism, preparing yourself for the next thing by listening to things that are not necessarily flattering about yourself. What an amazing learning opportunity, right? To be able to gain that from someone that listens and observes and that gives you direct and frank feedback about what you could improve, obviously in a nice way, but still aimed to help you develop. It's really a great opportunity. Mm-hmm. So looking back and reflecting, what do you wish you knew at the beginning of your career?
Yeah, so many things I wished I would have known. So, but I think the most important, I touched on it earlier, is like, I don't have to go the way alone and I don't have to do it all by myself and I don't have to know it all by myself. So really, don't work in isolation and seek help from other people and input from other people. And I think this is where really the magic happens when you want to move things, I don't know, in your careers. Like literally, it's all about like, you don't have to do it alone and you need to be part of the bigger picture as well. And you need to see where you fit in there.
Absolutely. If I were listening to this podcast when I started my career, I would probably take this advice even more, you know, serious than now that I know about it and now that I've experienced it myself.
Yeah.
What a big change it made to know that and to feel that you don't need to know everything yourself and that you can say, I don't know, I need support. I am not an expert. I just started my career. So let me have this feeling of team, community, peer collaboration that really supports your development as well. You can learn by yourself everything and you shouldn't be working in isolation thinking that this will grow your development because, of course, that's also based on how people perceive you and see you do things.
Yes.
And that's it's a very good reflection to always be aware of it and not put so much pressure on yourself to constantly perform at 100% because it is not possible and you need to...
And I think maybe that also feeds in again into this question, which we had earlier. How do I make sure people recognize me and recognize the good work I'm doing? And I think that's a way. And the only thing I would advise people, don't expect results within a week. It all is a long-term game you have to play there. You know, people will start to respect and trust you, but it takes time, you know, and you have to continuously doing it until one day you're starting to reap. The outcome out of it.
Very good reflection, Simone. Thank you so much. Okay, it's time for the final five fire questions. And I want to ask you first, what is one book you think everyone should read?
So, yeah. So it's called The 1 Minute Manager from Ken Blanchard. It's actually a series of small books. Really love those because it takes maybe 4 hours to read. So it's very quick. But it's so clear and so helpful, especially for people who are just starting out as managers. Like, how do you prioritize? How do you get the best out of your team? So I would really recommend that to everyone.
Awesome. What is the best piece of advice you have ever received?
Know what you want and be proactive about achieving it. Yeah. That's
very clear. Very crisp and very clear, Simone. Thank you for that. Who is your role model?
There's a lady called Hildegard Wortmann. She's the member of the board of the Audi AG. And I really love to see her LinkedIn. I'm following her on LinkedIn because, like, whenever talking about role models, you know, she's always in those pictures with all of the men. And it's just her, but she really looks like she's belonging there and she's running the show. Absolutely love it.
Amazing. What would you choose to do if you were to have another career?
I don't know. Maybe I think the strengths which I already have naturally, I think they would apply very well to law. But, you know, in the end, I'm quite happy with my engineering career and then never really considered a second path.
That's great. And I also, I mean, I must say that this is a difficult question for some, but it's also an opportunity for others to say, I would become a singer or something completely different.
Yeah.
But it really seems like you have found your passion. And I'm also, I mean, as a person that really admires you, I really like the fact that you are owning the fact that this is a path that I consider since I was very young and I'm happy with the results and I feel like I'm growing. This is really a great also message to leave our audience with, the fact that sometimes you actually can know, and sometimes it will take longer to figure out what you're good at and what you would like to do for your career. So it's all a very personal journey. Okay, and now the last question is, if you could change places with someone, who would it be and why?
I don't want to change places with anyone. I really like
Sibirius. I love it. I love it. I think, you know, like looking at also our conversation so far, I really like the fact that you know yourself. And you are also very happy with the setup that you have.
Yes.
What a great, you know, it's a great story to share with the world. And I'm happy that we got to interact because I really find it inspiring. And I love the fact that whenever you feel like there was anything to improve or anything to discuss, you took ownership and said, hey, I'm going to do this. It's part of my development plan. I want to be better at it. And I don't mind hearing some, I don't know, constructive or maybe sometimes negative feedback because I'm ready to take it on.
Yeah.
That's really a great attitude to have when it comes to your development. I really feel like you're thinking about your development seriously, but you also are ready to kind of get in the more difficult discussions to grow. And that's really fantastic, Simone. I'm very happy you've shared all of this advice. I hope you had fun. That was it. I'm so happy to hear that. I hope you enjoyed this interview and thank you again for joining FemLead.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, it was great.
Great to hear. And thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for more updates from inspiring female role models. Hello, hello, hello. Before we go, we want to say thank you for listening and thank you for supporting FemLead Podcast. At the same time, we want to bring to your attention that as we are expanding our community, we want you to be aware of some of the ways that you can support us. You can promote our podcast and our interviews within your organization and ask whether your company can become a partner with us. We host events, both networking events and company collaborations, every quarter, and we are looking to expand our network and to bring the FemLead community and spirit to more organizations. We also create podcast packages for interviews of role models from across the world. Lastly, we are planning a new career conference in 2024. So if you are interested in supporting us and you are based in Copenhagen or in Denmark, you can reach out to us at hello@femleadpodcast.com and we can share some of the sponsorship packages we've prepared for you to become a partner at our next Career Breakthrough Conference. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and stay tuned for more inspiring content from FemLead Podcast.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of FemLead Podcast. Share the news with your friends. And follow us on social media @FemLead Podcast everywhere.